I think everything with the DNC and Jon Favreau analysis is wrong. You today have been saying that like part of this is just that Jon might have been bad at that interview. I'm curious, like, how much do you fall into, hey, that was poorly executed versus that was too much hit PC versus you don't like it at all? Like, where are you now, Stephen?
I mean, it was definitely way too much of a hit piece. Like, if the goal was to be a hit piece, I think it was well done as a hit piece. I just don't know why we're hit piecing our own people.
I think the challenge is whether we think PodSave and kind of like the ecosystem counts as part of the democratic infrastructure or not. Mm-hmm. So I'll start with, you know, kind of a notion that we can work from it. Like, I think that the credibility crisis on process inside the Democratic Party is real enough. And we can go into like, okay, is it actually what they do or is it just how it's represented? But it's real enough within the base, within people who we want to be part of the base, that addressing it kind of viscerally, which you could say doing a piece on PodSave on Ken Martin does, mm-hmm. is a good thing.
Okay. Just as a quick heads up, because this entire conversation is going to be you presenting an idea that you think would be really good to happen. It's going to be me agreeing with the idea, and then it's going to be me stating that while that would be a great idea, that's not what the show was. That's just my
So where do you think we disagree?
I think having challenging interviews is fine. I don't think that was a challenging interview. I think that was literally just a hit piece. I don't think there was any way that Ken Martin could have come out on top of that, given the fact that he corrected Jon multiple times on facts that he was just completely and totally incorrect about over and over again. And then I think that if that was going to be a super critical interview, one, I'm not entirely sure why we're giving our own super ultra critical interviews, unless they're just like explicitly not part of, I guess, the Democratic Party or don't see themselves as part of that. And then three, I think it would have been good for Ken to know that that was the type of thing that he was walking into, because it seems pretty clear that he had no clue that that's what he was walking into.
That last one I agree with. I don't know that I agree with the rest. So like, hold on. So one of the things that I think is interesting here is like whether or not it's valuable to have infighting. And I think there's some of this is coming from what I can agree with, which is like what the left and Hassan do, mm-hmm. which
You're about to give a whole bunch of stuff that I agree with, but it's not what happened on the show, but go ahead.
Okay, what do you think happened then? Be very clear.
Well, I mean, you just again, said you it's valuable to have infighting. I'm not going to disagree that some level of infighting is valuable, but that infighting isn't where you ambush the head of the DNC on a relatively
When you say ambush, right? He brought up something that Ken Martin said he was going to release. It's also something that if we think about the credibility crisis going on in the process side, right? Like, keep in mind something about the Democratic Party.
Sure. Ambushing is when you quote mine and then you're setting them up with quotes and you're not even really substantively addressing the responses you're giving you, but you're just moving from one quote to the next. That's like an ambush hit piece style. We should probably literally never be doing hit piece style interviews on our own. You can still have critical interviews without being a hit piece, but.
What do you think is, when you say hit piece, what's the difference between a hit piece and a challenging interview, I guess? Is it just that he kept going down a list?
Yeah, on a hit piece, you basically can never win. You're never going to come out of a hit piece looking good by design.
But wasn't Ken Martin's choice the thing that meant he could never win? I don't think that, like, I see another out. It's the fact he's not releasing the report and doesn't have good excuses for why.
I'm not actually sure if he ever said he was going to release that report publicly now. I don't even think that was true, number one.
It seems like it's true, but I hear you.
Yeah, and then number two.
Hold on, I'll read the quote after.
Sure. We'll read it right now. Fuck it.
At the time, he was questioned why the DNC hadn't released its 2016 autopsy. When he questioned what happened with that, was there any utility in doing that? And then he says, of course it will be released, Martin said in February, referring to a future review of the 2024 election. There has to be some lessons that we glean on that so we can operationalize it, not just here in DC, but through all of the 57 state parties and, of course, the county parties, so people have a sense of what we need to do.
That's very clearly a statement indicating he's going to release it
to the public.
The only thing you could possibly do is say that, like, the fact he said lessons in that sentence and said lessons in the Jon Favreau interview is like the stretch.
Here's the full quote, Stephen, if you want to. And then if you want the article, I can send it to you too.
When he says, of course, we'll be released, referring to a future review on the 2024 election, there has to be some lessons that we glean on that so that we can operationalize it, not just here in DC. What does that quote come from?
In comments to reporters, Martin committed to the public release of the 2024 report.
That's yeah, but I'm curious, what was the question before
him? Can you
pull
this up in Discord, Stephen?
Here, I'll send it to you too.
Because it sounds like the way that I read when you say there has to be some lessons that we can glean on so that we can operationalize it, that sounds like a party-related thing. Not just here in D.C., but through all the 57
state
parties.
Hold on, but I want the same thing as you do. What's the question? But it's an article, so we're not going to see the preceding question. But certainly the way this is framed and the way the DNC has framed this for years has been it's about the full report.
For years?
I mean, this is a discussion that's been ongoing. Yeah, seeing what we're in 2026, so it's not like that.
Oh, sorry. Fuck, I forget the fucking time. Never mind. You're right. Yeah. It's been years since the election. Well, a year and a half, yeah. I'd be curious what he's responding to. I mean, that would definitely change my perception of it. So, like, if a reporter said, are we all going to see the autopsy or whatever? And then his response is this, then I'd say, oh, well, here it sounds like he was talking about releasing it to the public. But if it was like, you know, are members of the Democratic Party going to know what was in that autopsy or something like that, then that would change how I would review it. If I give this the worst reading ever, then I would just say that he shouldn't have made this promise. It was a stupid promise to make. But I don't know if it would necessarily change the way I would.
Which, by the way, you also keep saying that, like, he's going to, and someone in chat pointed this out, that he said he's going to release it to certain leaders. And a lot of the people I don't know if John was accurate about this. Ken did not refute it. I think the leaders inside the state apparatuses are not getting this report so far either. So he's not half doing the promise at all. Like, we're dressing this as if he's like,
well,
you know,
the operationalization.
I guess this is the question. So then here's like the big critique that I'm going to make, just like
Quick thing. The reason why it's difficult for you to have this conversation right now is because of how exceptionally dog shit the interview that John gave was, because there would have been good questions. He could have said,
probably in this conversation.
Well, no. I'm saying that, like, when you're to bring up, like, specifics like, it could have been that John said that, he could have said, well, in North Carolina, they really needed, you know, to rely on this for some race or whatever. And this leader came out and said that he wasn't able to get into contact with you or whatever. Like, those would have been really good points to bring up, or asking Ken, like, you know, who have you brought this up to? Who feels like they haven't gotten enough from this? Like, those would have been good points to bring up, but because John was doing a hit piece and not an actual interview, we never actually got any of those questions at all. So.
Okay, let's
here's
embrace
the full quote. I'll just read it out real quick. I sent it to Steve as well. I just want to say that there was a post-election review done many years ago, right after the 16 election, right? And there was never, and that was never released. The DNC spent a lot of time and money on that. Wasn't even released to the DNC members. So what happened with that, right? Was there any utility in doing that? Of course, it will be released, right? It'll be released to our members, and we will have to learn from that. There has to be some lessons that we glean on so that we can operationalize it, not here just in D.C., but all in 57 state parties, and of course the county parties, so people, blah, blah, blah. That's the full quote, I guess.
Okay.
I mean, his whole frame is the right frame, which is we should be, as a party, and again, this is the critique, this is the, you know, kind of overarching theme of the Democratic Party going back to basically like the 2012 era, is behind closed doors, decisions happen, analysis are made, and the truth is told, and people only get the sanitized version. I, as somebody who, again, votes for the center-left candidate every single time, wants the center-left candidate to win, fights the Bernie-crats all the time, I think this critique ruins a lot of how the party functions, because it's real. It's real that I can't say anything when they go, oh, you know, a lot of the party mechanics happen behind closed doors. We don't have this ability to see what the actual conversation was. We only get the sanitized version. I have to go, yeah, that's true. That's how it's always worked. That's, you know, kind of reasonable for XYZ reason. But then it makes me, it makes the party, it makes all the establishment portions of the party seem like we're trying to hide something.
Well, no, it doesn't. This is just how
yes, it
one,
does.
No, it's how every single analysis works ever, number one.
So hold on. What does that mean? That's not true. What do you think you're saying there? Because you've said this a few times.
Because typically when there's like an audit or an analysis or something done on a particular thing, the raw like report of that that's generated isn't usually sent out to every single person that's going to.
You said that, and I don't know what that means, right? So let's go, for example, to like when the RNC has released this report in the past. A very full report is released. So, like, I know that you're saying, like, philosophically, in the world of, like, corporations or politics, there are times when a report does not reveal the fullness of its data. It's just, like,
what people put together.
That's, like, philosophically true.
Sure. We'll go to that just as a real quick thing on this quote before we move on from this quote. It sounds like in this quote, getting the fuller quote here, that this is just about DNC members. It's not about publicly releasing the report, just to be clear. Because reading into more that was said here, there was a post-election review done many, many years ago, right after the 2016 election, right? And that was never released. The DNC spent a lot of time and money on it, and it wasn't even released to the DNC members. So what happened with that, right? Was there any utility in doing that? He said on Friday. Of course,
this still hasn't been released to the DNC members. Why are you defending something that hasn't happened as if it, you know, refutes the overall point?
Well, I'm just saying right now I'm refuting that it's going to be.
Yeah, you're just doing apologetics.
No, I'm refuting your point. Did you or did you not claim that it was going to, that it should be released publicly?
Right, but there's a set of promises not being held. Even if you're right. There's a set of promises.
Question. Did you say that it was going to be released publicly or should be released publicly?
Whether or not I did, my point.
Did you say that it was going to be released publicly?
I'm not here to do debate purgatory. My point was that if he makes a set of promises about how the party works and people have a credibility crisis about the party where they talk about how process is done behind closed doors, then whether or not it's to the members or to the people and we want to be clear about the promise, no promise was upheld.
That's great.
No promise.
And you can build another line of argumentation if you want. But you initially talked about it being released publicly, right?
I think it should be released publicly.
That's fine. And so did Ken, or I'm sorry, yeah, so did
I don't
John.
Need to hold on that point. I don't need to hold on that point. He's not releasing the DNC.
You don't have to, so give it. You don't have to hold on to it, so you can get the point.
We're not talking about that point. We're talking he hasn't even released the DNC, so why is it that he's creating more of a process? Hold on. One of the things you're saying here that I think is like, just, you know, this
I'm
is true.
Repeat the exact same question. I'm not responding to whatever you're about
DNC,
to say. So
the
rant,
DNC receiving this, that promise being upheld, would at least be better than not giving it to the DNC. True or false?
I don't know.
As far as the credibility crisis,
for this quote, he was talking about, it seems like he was talking about releasing it to DNC
members, right?
You're right. This was
so
about releasing it to DNC
members. If there's a credibility crisis in the party,
answer his question and then he'll answer.
All right, go ahead. Ask the question again.
This quote, that now that we have more context behind it, seemed to be about releasing it to DNC members. Nothing in here was about releasing it publicly, right?
Is this the same political article that?
Sure.
Here is the full quote. I'll send it to you as well. Sorry. There you go. You can read it.
Actually, no. This is about an ambiguous thing that could include the public, because the first sentence says, I just want to say that there was a post-election review done many years ago, right after the 16 election, right? And that was never released. That's one claim by itself, or one statement by itself. The next statement says, the DNC spent a lot of time and money on that, wasn't even released to the DNC members. Wasn't even released to the DNC members. In other words, the first claim is a more expansive thing than only the DNC members. So actually, you're wrong about this.
So you think that when he says in the, can you read the next paragraph of this article?
Why don't you just put it on your Discord stream and highlight what you want me to look at?
Of course it will be released, right? That the next thing. What does he say?
Uh-huh. Of course it will release our members. Yeah. Well, hold on. Are you asking me the question or what he said?
That's what he said, right?
Yeah. I agree with you. But the question, the preceding thing was about more than just the DNC members, correct or wrong?
The DNC spent a lot of time and money on it. It wasn't even released to...
Read from the sentence before that.
There was a post-election review done many years ago, right after the 2016 election, right? And that was never released. The DNC spent a lot of time and money on it, and it wasn't even released to the DNC members.
In other words, it wasn't even released to the DNC members as an extension of an original question, as it wasn't released in general.
It could be, I guess.
I'm with you there. I don't think this is as important as you do.
No, I'm just trying to establish one thing. There's not like... I don't think there was some clear promise by Ken that he was going to release this raw report to the public.
But would you think that it's fair to say if there's a credibility crisis, regardless of where we land on this?
That's fine. We can go down that line of questioning if you want. Okay, but then hold on. I just want to make sure that we establish on this. It doesn't seem like there was a clear like promise from him where he's like, we're going to release this to the public after we do it.
Fair.
Okay. What is the second line of questioning going to go down?
So, I mean, where are you on the idea that the credibility crisis is important inside this party? I know that like your entrance into politics a little bit later, so like you might be more oppositional to the people that think there's a credibility crisis or that it's worthy. But again, I'd point to it's something that I've felt, and I've previously worked for Dems. Dems have felt in general from the left. There's a real thing that we would say, okay, this is not. This is not necessarily something we think is fair in a vacuum, because there's an intellectual defense we can make around why the party works this way. But so much of what the party does happens behind closed doors. People inside the party, whether it's the apparatus of the party or the public, gets a sanitized version. When all of that is true, right, there's something I'm referring to as a credibility crisis. Do you think this is a legitimate thing, or do you think this is a fake thing, or where do you stand on it?
Okay. I think there probably is a perception of credibility crisis. I don't know if any of the things that you just brought up have anything to actually do with credibility, though.
Go ahead. Tell me more.
Well, the first thing that you said, that things are done behind closed doors or whatever, this is true of literally everything, including the Republican Party. The idea that every single debate would be had publicly seems really strange to me. I doubt that that's ever the case ever with anything politically done.
Yeah, I don't think I meant that literally everything is exposed, but there's a spectrum here, right? Like, we have to be honest about the spectrum. So like, one of the things that I think you're like saying is some of the stuff should be, kind of behind closed doors, reasonable. I guess the question is, if we can identify, is enough being done in front of people, or is enough being talked about in front of people, I should say, because it's not that you need to have the public involved. And I'll go to, okay, let's look at what the Republicans have done. So the Republicans have released autopsies in different years where we've seen the full autopsy. They don't have to adopt the
conclusions. Can I ask a question real quick? How many autopsies like this have been released?
I don't know. I think it's not that many, but there have been a few.
Are you sure there have been a few?
Yeah. Well, no. Am I wrong? I thought there's literally like the famous one from the Republicans they literally did before Trump, and Trump listened to none of it and the party listened to none of it. No? Am I making that up?
I've just seen people in chat type, but I don't know. Because I saw people in chat say that literally there was one in 2012 and that it was a disaster. But the reason why it was so exceptional was because people generally don't ever do this.
Either way, I don't know why we have to, like, this is life is life. We can decide what is reasonable, not on this notion. If it's ever been released, we can refer to something and say, okay, what does, like, because one of the things that I think you're concerned about is how this is going to be used.
No, stop. Don't stop jumping so far ahead. Why do you think I just brought up what I just said?
Because you're trying to establish whether or not it's a norm.
Correct. Because one of the arguments you gave for releasing it was because it is a norm.
Yes.
And,
yes.
Well, if it's not a norm.
No, I said there's a credibility crisis. I didn't say because it's a norm.
No, yeah, one of the specific arguments that you just made was that there have been a few of these. First you said lots, and then you said few, and now we're at one in 2012, have been released in the past. Therefore, that would make that a more legitimate strike against your credibility. Right? If every single season had one of these released, and then one season...
I didn't say every single season. I said some. I don't think it's just one.
I understand you did not say that, but I'm saying if all but one had been released, that would be a huge blow to your credibility. If only one in the history of all of politics had ever been released, then it would probably have no effect on your credibility at all, right? Or very, very very little effect on your credibility. Okay, go ahead.
Wait, now I'm actually going to look it up, because we should establish how much of my credibility this should harm. Okay, while AI does its thing.
In 2023, I see an article on NBC about Republican Party officials plan to keep private an internal autopsy report assessing why many of their candidates fell short in the 2022 midterm elections. Two people familiar with the party's thinking on the matter told NBC News on Friday.
That's Dems, right?
No, this is for Republicans.
I thought the Republicans released 2022. No?
Well, no. Or if they did, it would have come out at a later article, but this is written in 2023. So I believe that the post-election analysis is meant to be for internal use only, taking the lessons we've learned so we can improve, one RNC member said. Ooh, he even used that word, lessons. I don't think it will be made publicly available.
Now you don't want me to jump ahead, but I want to make another point. Do we have to stick on this one?
I'm comfortable with what I've established on this point, so go ahead.
We should come back to it. I'm not finished with it. This is not an established point. You haven't won.
Sure, but you kind of established that, like, the Republicans did this, and now that he's fighting you on it, you're kind of running away from the point.
Well, I am not running away from the point at all. I already acknowledged that the releases might be fewer than what I said.
As long as we agree on the facts on this, I'm fine. Okay, good. But then we have done.
Again, this is not meant for me. I'm here to actually persuade. I do not care about, you know, kind of relenting on, oh, it might be one instead of three. I don't know how many have been released. Okay. By the way, it looks like the DNC released one in 2015. There was a commission from the DNC that was released in 2017. So those are the post-2010 ones. We can look beforehand for the 2010s. So that looks like, again, depending on what these are, I'm going to look definitionally. The DNC and RNC have released more than one. But again, I'll look specifically as to whether these would actually apply. So let's talk about like the infighting or like what that conversation represents. I'm gonna just like make the comparison I want to make and let you decide whether you think it's relevant and we can yell about it. One of the things that we admire or resent about the right is that they always come home, right? And so like Trump can say all sorts of things about Ted Cruz's wife, and Ted Cruz is the biggest Trump stan on the planet. I don't know why we can't have this interview and think of this as a benefit for the entire party, because Jon Favreau is literally, and Podsave are considered insiders in establishment by most people. You are very alone, and your orbit is very alone in considering that that's not the case.
My orbit doesn't think that's the case. I don't know where you got that impression from, but okay.
Wait, sorry, that people outside disagree with you, or that they agree with you?
That they're not, that the speechwriters for the Obama admin are not Democratic Party insiders, or at least were, yeah?
Oh, so you agree with me, okay.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I'm just going down a pike. So there's that portion of it. Then there's the portion where we go, okay, can they fight in public? Can we have these debates that, you know, kind of, whether we want to call them hit pieces or whatever else we want to call them, where the spat happens and it's good for everybody involved? Because one, let's look at John. John knows going into 2028, he's going to have to fight credibility accusations. He's going to fight people on the left. He's going to fight people in the Biden camp who are going to come after him now that they've established adversarial relationship. The ability for him to hold credibility in those conversations as, you know, kind of this establishment-ish podcast is improved by being the one to have permission to hold Ken to account and holding him to account versus having a softball interview. And you're probably going to agree with me and say, oh, there's a middle ground. But I think this is important to say is like, this is just like the first of what will be many instances of interviews where we're going to see people try to figure out what their role is in 2028. But don't we want PodSave and the DNC to be answering to John in that conversation to establish that this is a party that can have conversations like this? This is a party that's willing to actually yell at each other for an hour on a podcast and then walk away, both having established their point of view. But at least that point of view was heard versus, again, what I'd say is the establishment crisis or the process crisis that happens before this, which is the Bernie people will tell you, and I'd say they're 20% right, but they're still 20% right, that this sort of thing couldn't have happened in a past version of Democratic Party politics.
No.
Is this not a good thing?
No.
Healthy for John,
no.
Healthy for Ken.
I just
want
to cut in that I think we should be doing these behind closed doors, not in a public interview where we're lambasting the head of the DNC. It's just a bad look for everybody, first off. And if you do have a problem with it, you can talk to Ken behind closed doors. I'm sure that he'd bring you over to the DNC and maybe even give you a sneak peek at the autopsy if you're like a campaign manager, et cetera, like that.
So everything you just said, I know you said in good faith, but Lucas, everyone in Democratic Party politics would understand why what you just said is what can't happen. Because the critique from Bernie and his party is literally what you just said, that it would happen behind closed doors, that you'd have to know somebody or be some sort of power player, and you'd move towards the exact credibility crisis that I think causes some of the left who could be capturable to be uncapturable. Because they go, look, why does this have to be behind closed doors? Why can't we have this conversation out loud? Why do we have to hide this from more junior members of the party? That'd
because
be the
that's
thing.
How everything in life works. You don't have every single strategy meeting publicly. Nobody in the history of all of mankind has ever done that ever. That's just not a functional.
No one's saying
to
have
anything.
Every strategy meeting publicly. That's not. Like, these are not the two polls or two choices.
Okay, but the only argument you're giving is why shouldn't we have this publicly? Because public is better. And I'm telling you, that's not necessarily true. So you
what
need
thing? What thing do you think I want to have happen publicly?
Okay, hold on. I'm trying to get better at this, and you're a good test person for this because you're so crazy bad at this. I need you to respond to the thing that I say instead of immediately pivoting to another diverting question, okay? Do you accept,
I'm not diverting
no,
shit.
No, you are. You have the mind for it.
No, you are bad at asking questions,
apparently. Bad faith debater mind, okay? So I'm trying to hold to a single
point. I have bad faith debater mind?
Yes, yeah, because you're not responding to anything I'm saying. You're always setting up your next attack, and you're avoiding anything I say by just setting up the next question.
You are so Hassan-pilled. It's unbelievable.
It has
go ahead.
Nothing to do with us. You just did it again.
Yes, it is. You do everything so oppositionally. I'm not trying to redirect.
You just redirected by bringing up Hassan, because what I just said had to do with debates that I've been in. I don't debate Hassan. So what you just did, you just did another thing right there, right? So I very clearly, okay, I just
that's
said
not bad faith.
I said,
what I did is not bad faith.
I said that nothing is done publicly all the time. Like, there are things you have behind closed doors. That's a counter to your point of why wouldn't they do this publicly? Publicly would be better. Now, if you want to argue that there's some reason they should do it publicly, then you have to make another argument for why they should do it publicly. Do you understand what I'm saying?
What's the question I asked you?
Before this?
What thing you want what thing do you think I want to have happen publicly? What thing do you think I'm talking about?
I guess a release of this report?
I don't actually, this is why I asked that clarifying question, and you diverted from that question. I don't mind if it's just this discussion.
You asked that question in response to the point that I brought up. I'm not diverting. I'm just trying to finish.
Exactly. Same thing. We're having a back and forth.
No,
we might not always directly answer.
Back and back. No, if you're not going to answer my question, I'm not going to answer yours.
There's a difference in a bad faith diversion and me bringing up what I believe is an adjacent point because we're having an extended conversation. If you can't handle that, then you're not going to be able to have conversations with people who are coming to you in good faith and trying to persuade you, or you're trying to persuade them, and it's just a dialogue. There's nothing that I'm trying to divert. If you want to always reframe your question, I'm happy to attempt to address it directly whenever I haven't in your point of view. So back to you're wrong. I don't want the report to release, or I don't care about the report being released publicly. I'm neither here nor there on holding on to that point. But what I do care about is this conversation being something we can do. This conversation, this sort of debate being something that the party is capable of, that we understand different people have different roles inside the party. This goes to something we've been talking about for weeks now.
Yeah, this
and
is
I think,
not a
John,
debate. My point is that this is not a debate that two allied factions should ever have. This is just not an appropriate.
Why? That's that. Let's talk about that. So why?
Because this was a hostile interview, and hostile interviews are only set up to make one side look bad. Why would you?
Don't
do
you
that
think this happens? All, let's see if there's a lesson to learn from the Republican Party. Don't you think this happens all the time inside their apparatus?
Never.
What do you mean never?
As in, it does not happen with their party.
They literally. Okay, hold on. They literally fought about 2022 midterms like crazy. They fought after.
What do you mean they fought about them by crazy? What do you mean by that?
The party after 2022.
Who is the party?
Am I making this up? The Republicans.
All of them? Every voter? I don't. You're not
Hold
making
on. Again. That's why I tried
right
to
now.
Be like, this is not what I'm asking for. I'm not asking that we involve every Democrat
no,
in
no,
the conversation.
No, stop. Don't pivot. I don't know what you just said. I have no idea what you just said. When you said every Republican fought, I don't know what that means. Every voter? What do you mean?
I don't
mean
have
by
in
that?
Front of me a replay, so I'm trying to say something thematic. Thematically, what I recall about the 2022 election, what I thematically remember about the 2022 election.
Are you saying that there were interviews on Fox News that were incredibly challenging? Are you saying that elected lawmakers were blowing up Trump over this or what?
That's a good question. I don't remember specifically the mechanics of it. I will say what I remember thematically from 2022's midterms is that the entire Republican Party had a meltdown, yelling at each other. Now, to your point, could it have been it's a mixture of like, did Fox ever do it? I don't know. It might have not been Fox at all. So is Pod Save the equivalent of Fox? Might be a point you were trying to make. And that's interesting. I don't remember the specifics. However, what I do remember, it was vicious, as in people were yelling at each other in ways that were challenging to each other's, let's say, existential, you know, kind of role and place and credibility within the party. Right. And so there was this sort of sense to which you said, OK, they're not trying to hold back from critiquing each other. And the question will be after this, can they move forward hand in hand?
OK, I reject the entire argument here, especially
just because you don't remember, too, what happened in 2022. Is that why you reject it?
I mean, they
because what
Trump
you're saying didn't happen. Because I reject that this ever happened. And the fact that you have no examples, that you not even a single one that you can think of off the top of your head, means that I just don't agree that this happened. I don't think it did.
Okay. Let me get AI in that case before I make my next sentence. One second.
Jarvis?
By the way, Brian, that's a good point. But midterms are very different from presidentials, even for Dems. This is one of the things that Ken Martin could also be critiqued on. The fact that we're doing well right now has absolutely no bearing on the presidential. We've seen that even with, you know, kind of.
Sure. But your argument was that like both sides are like holding each other as equally accountable. And we like ran.
Right. But I'm talking midterm and midterm. No. But I'm talking midterms and midterms. Right. I'm comparing midterms to midterms. I'm not comparing this to presidential.
Yeah, but I think broadly the point, like it's kind of contradicted by presidential.
No, but it's not because the midterms are very different. Because the point Ken made during the interview was we're crushing right now in elections. But actually, the 2024 autopsy is about the presidential. We know very discreetly that like Dems will do this thing where they win midterms massively and then take very poor lessons into a presidential that reacts very differently to them.
I think the one thing that I'm a little confused about is like you're kind of arguing for this conversation, but like you're very agnostic on whether or not the autopsy should be released.
Well, because there's a real thing here that I think is about like whether the party can be challenged. I think John has enough credibility to have the conversation. I hope he retains it after this challenging interview with people like Ken because of his, you know, kind of past with Obama. I think the confrontational nature was not existential for Ken. Yes, it made him look bad, but I don't think he's there.
The problem
other than
is
from
that
crazy
if you're
people.
Trying to have a challenging conversation on your side, you can have a challenging conversation without doing it in like an ambush hostile style interview. You can have a friendly, challenging conversation. It's possible to do that where the goal is the bolstering of whatever your political project is and both sides understand that. That was not a challenging conversation. That was a conversation that was designed to make Ken look bad.
Well,
I think it was a conversation designed to make John look
like
good.
A fucking retard, by the way.
No, only to
yes,
you guys. Only
no,
to you guys.
He was wrong about literally everything, and he got his ass smacked by Ken like six times in the interview. He came out looking like a retard.
Well,
to be fair,
I think that if you were on the team that John was representing, you think that Ken Martin looked horrible. And if you were just like an ordinary person watching it, you would probably come out thinking that Ken looks bad. That would actually be.
And this goes to a many month conversation, by the way, is who's on the team? Because if you go to TikTok, if you go to Instagram, if you go to Facebook, if you go
to what I just said, but okay.
Wait, why not?
I was just addressing how I thought the conversation would have looked to people if you were on the on John's team, the team that he was
I'm addressing
there.
The same exact point. And the question is, who's on the team? And if you go to these social media platforms where we see the sort of people on the team that I keep trying to tell you we should care about, they think that it was John who won the conversation. I think they're a much larger part of the party than this room thinks they are.
Okay.
Is that fair?
It just has nothing to do with what I'm saying.
Why does that have nothing to do with it?
It's a totally separate argument. No, I'm not.
Why?
Because that's a totally separate argument. If you want to go on who's on the team, then we can do that. But that's a totally separate argument from what we're arguing right now. I was just.
I wasn't saying it oppositionally. I was stacking on top. I was stacking on top for
Lucas. Nothing to do with anything. Literally, it's nothing to do with this current argument right now. It has nothing to do with who's on the team. My position was that because it is a hit style piece, that the team that John is representing will feel like the interview was good. And then anybody that's on Ken's team probably is not going to feel that great about it unless you're really on his team. And then people who are neutral or in the middle are going to feel like Ken did bad. That is the purpose of a hit piece style piece.
I understand what you're saying, but I think Ken was able to overcome that in this piece because he literally calls out John multiple times and he's like, no, you're spewing garbage.
It doesn't matter. I understand what you're saying. If you're looking at the facts, then sure. But not many people view it that way. In a hit piece style interview, the goal is to hit you up with as many like quotes or inconsistencies or falsities as possible. And even if you're correct on a thing, I'm just going to move on to the next point afterwards. So there's not actually any kind of catharsis or whatever felt by a viewer in that like, oh, he got him there, because the interviewer doesn't acknowledge it. He just moves on to the next thing. And John did that on every single one. That's why it was an ambush hit piece style thing. There was no acknowledgement of anything Ken said when he was correcting John on one of the 20 different things he was completely actually incorrect about. It was moving on to the next hit piece style thing. That's why I'm saying it was
what you're saying. Yeah. If somebody watched the entire thing, then I would disagree with you, but if somebody just got a clip of it, I would agree with you. Yeah. Well, I think
we can find somebody in a torture chamber and lock him and force him to watch it. I think most people would probably come out thinking that the Ken Martin guy didn't look good, like neutral at best, and then probably not good in general. That'd be my guess. But
and the point I'm trying to build on top of it is most people here are either experiencing it through clips or experiencing it through the lens of being frustrated with the Democratic Party as a party, not necessarily as the individuals inside of it. And so most people, and again, you can see this in the social media commentary around this from the Democratic Party, thought it was great for John that John challenged Ken, who represents to them something like the hidden, you know, kind of mechanics of the party who are continuing to hide the ball from the people in the party. And they came away thinking that was a win for John, a loss for Ken. Very few people think that Ken comes out looking good. Very few people have like the either desire to research or the history to understand the nuance of anything Ken said. And so he just lost optically. Sure. And I think that's the challenge, is how do we understand whether this was an interview that helps people? So those people in the party, right?
But the issue, real quick. The issue though, is that people in that interview were not viewing John as a member of, that's why I keep bringing up the team thing. John is not coming at this interview, I think what people are looking at him as, like a member of the Democratic Party where they're on a mutual mission to build up the Democratic Party. It feels like John is hating Ken as an outsider here.
Of course he's part of the member. And this is where I think this room, and I'm not saying this is a critique, so I think like everything I say, I'm really trying to push the ball forward. It's not a critique. I think this room views John that way.
Can I just skip and say everything you're going to say, because you could have already said it by now. Yeah, you're going to say that we have a bad perspective on John because we actually view John as being an outsider because we're so Hassan brain broken. But in reality, most people know that the Pod Save America guys are insiders in the Democratic Party, right? Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Thank you. That's not how they're functioning right now, though. That hit piece.
The perception has changed, right? So I agree with you that maybe the function has changed, and this is why this on interview important.
That's fine. Question. Uh-huh. Super easy. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. If I were to go online on social media right now and view the people who are using that Ken Martin interview by John, do you think they're talking about how like these are good critiques of the Democratic Party and how we can perform better? Or do you think that that's a narrative that's being seized upon by people saying the entire Democratic establishment is corrupt and needs to be replaced and rebuilt from the ground up?
I think more, you'd see more of the latter from an algorithmic perspective, but then I will ask you a question that I think is a useful follow-up that I mean in good faith.
Okay.
If we went to the normal, normie Democratic voter in New York who's 32-ish in a knowledge worker job and follows politics kind of at a, again, let's call it above normie, but below, you know, kind of politics nerd rate, do you think they would view this as John as the establishment talking to other establishment, or do you think they'd view it as a Bernie-style refutation of the party? And again,
I think they would view it as just that an interview that's demonstrating how completely fucked and horrible the Democratic Party is. I don't even know if they would have a view on who John is.
Yeah, which, by the way, I think still goes to the idea, though, that there's like an establishment there, because they're establishment in their nature, right? This sort of voter we're talking about. And so the fact that they see this and they vaguely know who the PodSafe guys are, because the PodSafe guys have penetrated culture.
Hold on. First of all, I don't think the average voter knows who the PodSafe guys are.
But you're wrong. And we talked about this last time. Remember, they have like a bunch of different podcasts now that where they also have like lifestyle people, celebrities. They do games with them on stage. I don't know if you clicked the link.
Biggest PodSafe podcast or whatever?
PodSafe America is, I guess we should differentiate. I guess it's Crooked Media is the network. PodSafe is their biggest podcast. And like John Lovett has something I'm forgetting the name of. Crooked Media Podcasts. Oh, they've got a ton now. They have a Stacey Abrams podcast.
We're about to argue over what, like, how do you determine someone having the culture? What does that mean?
Or I would be surprised if like the average person, like average voter knew, but maybe they do.
Voter doesn't know who.
Hold on, average voter, no. Average Democrat in a city, yes. That's my point. They've right. penetrated culture in a way where, again, like they literally have every celebrity on them. They like TV celebrities are considering them part of the tour now, right? So like when they have a new show or movie coming out, like the PodSafe's network of podcasts or Crooked Media's network of podcasts, which again is part of how they've penetrated culture, is to be more than politics itself, has now infiltrated mainstream Hollywood.
Who was the last mainstream Hollywood actor that went on a PodSafe thing? I don't have much pop culture connection, so maybe that's...
Yeah, fair. Let me actually look it up instead of closing the tab every time.
I mean, I would agree with you if we were talking about the people who do the hot ones or whatever. Like, we could have an agreement there, but PodSafe is nowhere near...
Yeah, like, do you think the average Democratic voter in a city is more likely to know the Hot Ones show or the PodSafe guys' shows?
The average Democratic voter would know the Hot Ones show or the PodSafe. I think it'd be much closer than you think.
Okay. It would be much closer than I think, because I would think that that's not close at all in my mind.
Well, so I'm not that big into celebrity culture, so I don't know all these faces, but like I don't know all these faces that I'm looking at inside this YouTube channel. But like Kathy Griffin's on here, but she's technically somewhat political. I don't know these names.
Can you just link the YouTube channel?
Okay, yeah, yeah, I'm okay, but
what do you want to
go, go on to the next point or whatever, I guess.
I'll DM it to you.
Sure.
Okay, I feel like we've been arguing.
The broader point I was making was that like these types of like ambush style conversations are just never done between two people on the same team. That the impression is never going to be that these two people are on the same team if this is the style of interview. I don't think most people would ever view it that way.
Right, but the question is whether the consequence of that is as harsh as if they were viewed oppositionally, right? So, like, I might agree with you.
Well, the consequence is just going to be on a hostile style interview, it's always going to be rough for the person being interviewed. They're almost always going to come out of that looking bad. That's what hostile interviews are designed to do.
Yes, agreed.
Okay.
Why
would you ever give that to somebody who's on your team? A hostile style interview.
Because you're trying to change how the party just talks. You're trying to change
you can't
how
do
the
that.
Party holds.
Why can't you do that with a friendlier but challenging interview?
Because I think John, so this is where I think that we should talk about the strategy of it, right? So I think John is seen and I think is trying to break out of the paradigm of we're establishment. And by the way, the Bidens did kind of reinforce this. Like, oh, you're the Obama guys. You're always going to be the Obama guys. You're always going to be people who are, you know, kind of attached to the 2012 version of establishment Democrat. You're not even attached to the Biden one, is again what the Biden camp would say. And a lot of people thought a lot of Biden's admin was more progressive than Obama's admin, which is like, I think, philosophically wrong. It's like a time and place thing. And so they're trying to break out of that mold and say, okay, actually, we're going to hold the party to account. We don't want to anymore be seen as people who are just parroting the party line. And we have more permission than people who they might now think of as like soft allies on the left to take the points that they think of as being credible and use them within the party. And so if we think about this from like, there's a credibility crisis, I think PodSave counts as part of the credibility crisis. That's like one of the points I'm trying to make, is they are seen by a lot of people as part of the apparatus.
Like, it feels like you just gave literally the perfect reason why this was like an other team interview and wouldn't be viewed that way. If they're trying so hard to not be viewed as part of the Democratic establishment, and then they give like a big fuck you hostile interview to the most Democratic Democrat, the head of the DNC, then it seems like, yeah, most people are going to view this as like an outsider style interview where it's just a hit piece on...
Well, maybe the distinction is whether people like care whether it's outside or like, I don't think they're trying to label it. And so it's more, you know, if Favreau's part of the apparatus and Ken is literally the head of the apparatus or part of the apparatus, then this is, it might, like, they don't go, oh, these are different teams. They go, oh, the party is finally trying to have these conversations out loud. The party can finally challenge itself.
Okay, here, real quick,
rather than hide the conversation.
Do you think that that's what most people took away from that? That like, oh, wow, the party is finally having challenging conversations?
I think it allows John to do it again. So even if they...
Hold on, wait. Do you think that most people would view that last interview as, oh, wow, the party is finally having challenging conversations?
No.
Okay. I feel like that's my point.
Do you see what sentence I want to say next? Do you know the sentence I want to say next?
The next one will be...
that the view of any particular conversation is not the important thing, right? So, like, obviously, this is shocking to people and will be seen as extraordinarily confrontational. Obviously. And so they won't view it in the totality of what you and I are saying in either direction. However, it is the beginning of a shift that they might have towards the people who are serious inside this party. And John counts as one of those fucking people, right? And so if we think about this as changing tonally and changing structurally what the party is capable of, and if we do have a credibility crisis that really causes half the left to have an aneurysm every time there's an election, then I think we can reasonably say, even if this conversation was not perfect, and no conversation will be, it's the evidence of an internal dialogue, especially after the DNC goes on a listening tour, and for whatever reason, even if people misinterpreted his quote, everyone thinks this report is going to come out. Okay, we can't have the listening tour and not reflect, you know, kind of the fullness of the lesson, not just the summary of the lesson, and expect that the people who believe that all this happens inside people's heads, inside John's head, inside Obama's head, inside the DNC person who they believe kept Bernie out of winning primaries.
Why is it that they can't do this same thing with a mutually beneficial? With a mutually beneficial conversation? Why does the bolstering of John's reputation have to come at the expense of the Democratic
Party? How else would it have happened? This is a real question. So, like, mechanically, do you think John would go?
The easy answer I gave is just make it like the Hassan interview.
What?
He smooths everything over.
What part?
Yeah, that's not.
What?
Hold on. That was a gimme interview times 1,000. That sounds like establishment politics.
Well, I mean, he could give him an opportunity to answer the questions that he wants.
That's establishment politics. I wouldn't have even liked that.
We're not talking about establishment politics. We're talking about an interview that would theoretically build up the both of these people. No.
But to build them up requires taking the credibility crisis seriously, and I think this is where the critique is valid, right?
Taking the credibility crisis seriously. Better delivered. That's a down the road thing. There is no world where you have to be giving your own side hostile ambush interviews. I don't know if you can think of a single example of Republicans ever doing this.
By the way, so
Repeat that. Can you think of a single example of Republicans ever doing this?
Oh my God.
Answer the question.
Do you think my answer to this question is actually a representation of whether or not this is a real thing? We can't agree in principle as to whether or not Republicans have had real serious infighting. And by the way,
but if it's not, then it shouldn't bother you to answer it. So can you think of a single example of Republicans ever having hostile style interviews with their own people?
Yes or no?
These are cute. Like recently, obviously, the Tucker stuff is about, I don't even want to use that because that feels unfair, but
why?
Tucker stuff.
That's a good example. Yeah.
I don't think, I'm trying to be fair, I guess. I'm actually trying to be fair in this conversation and you aren't because you think I'm bad faith.
I'm trying to be fair.
That's recent.
Stop. Hold on. Yeah. We're going to do the Tucker Ted thing. What have I said that's in bad faith?
I don't actually think you're bad faith. What I'm trying to
say is I want it to be.
Oh my goodness.
You said you're actually trying to have a good faith conversation. The obvious implication being that I'm not. So what have I said so far that is...
I'm being mean to you because you were mean to me earlier, okay? I don't think either of us are bad faith. Fair?
Okay, I don't think that was the purpose of your statement, but okay. Okay, so on the Tucker
I think you're good faith.
On the Tucker versus Cruz debate, yeah. Do you think people saw that as two Republicans who were mutually trying to build up the Republican Party? Or was that more
So the reason I didn't want to bring that up, and we can interrogate it as a good example, and fine, but I actually didn't want to bring it up because I think the way the Republican Party is splitting right now is actually quite different than what I would want to have happen in the Democratic Party. We can establish...
I agree with you there, although I would say that one of the reasons why it's splitting that way mm-hmm. is because the people, Candace Owens, Tucker Carlson, Nick Fuentes, these people are playing mm-hmm. the role of John Favreau or whatever that right now in the Ken Martin interview. Absolutely. They are critically challenging.
You don't think these people will fall in line? You don't think these people will fall in line?
Who?
Everyone you just named except for probably Fuentes. Tucker, Candace, who else is doing this sort of shit?
For the next election, there's not going to be a line to fall into, but I think they'll all be Republican supporters, yes.
Yeah, so no, you're wrong. They're not like, or in the way in which like they're doing the John thing, they're doing what they know their party is capable of handling.
No, I think what they're doing right now is they see the winds changing and they're attacking the party in the hopes that it'll change into something like significantly different. They're trying to like morph or mutate it by attacking the party right now, understanding that it'll probably damage it a bit, but coming around for whatever the next election is. Again, I don't know what post-MAGA fucking Trump land is going to look like.
Well, so this is the point. What is the machination of the Democratic Party that we want? Do we want it to be something that has to fall in line with a specific cult leader? Or do we want it to be a party where this sort of conversation can happen? And whether it's Bernie or Hillary next, as in philosophically, you know, kind of parts of the party.
There is no style of party where you're doing ambush hostile interviews amongst friendly people. That just is never.
Didn't we just talk about examples about people who do this and the party still functions, the Republican Party still functions at the end of those conversations?
No, we brought up one and you said you didn't want to go into it, which was.
Hold on. Candace. Tucker, Fuentes, I don't know if he'll actually
people are all
fall into part.
Yes, these people are considered outsiders now from the party.
No, they're not. They're
like, Candace Owens, the one that Trump just truthed out a drugged out picture of?
Is yes. Ted Cruz not one of the biggest Trump simps after Trump said your wife looks like dog shit or whatever? Marco Rubio, Marco.
This was one of... Okay, I'm sorry. Let me... I can't believe I have to make this qualification, but yes, they do debate each other when they're literally on debate stages fighting for candidacy. Okay, sorry. That is a time when people will debate, is when they're on the debate stage in a primary election.
Do you think this also qualifies, by the way, when we have the congressional leadership fights? Because the McConnell and McCarthy fights were also really contentious for the Republican Party.
Yeah, and they were terrible for them. They were bad.
But the party thrives off of that, no?
No.
Everyone afterwards falls in line, right? There's literally no tension.
Those were bad fights. Those were terrible fights.
Right, but the party could contain them, right? The party's healthy enough.
No, they could not contain them. They were horrible fights. They were bad.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
McCarthy's career was destroyed. What are you talking about? He's gone for politics now.
That was not from the fight. That was from after the fight nonsense. I'm talking about at the time of the post.
I completely disagree. I just completely
disagree. Hold on. I think you're thinking of the wrong time. I'm talking about when he won.
Oh, I'm talking about
that was
when
a very contentious fight. I'm not talking about when he lost everything because he literally lost his career. Yes, I'm talking about when the Republican Party fought about him. That was a majority.
Hold on. Is when they lost their seat in the House, wasn't this because of a rule that McCarthy had crafted that allowed them to...
That was part of the concession he had to make as part of the party, as a part of taking the seat.
That one vote could call... And then wasn't his whole political career past that point basically done?
Not because of that point, right? So he had a contentious fight, won that leadership, and that was part of the concession package, if I remember correctly. It was like, you should be able to use a vote to kick us out. And then he proceeds to have a bad leadership. But it wasn't because of the election that he lost his career. That was the first fight. That was a representation that they can actually handle that disagreement. He then did a bad job. Or in their view,
I don't understand. I don't know. We just fundamentally disagree on everything. I don't know.
Unclear about that?
That fight was bad for Republicans and McCarthy's career ended because it showed that they couldn't even hold their House Majority Speaker seat. It was a fucking joke. They had to go to even every single Republican was criticizing them, saying because they were begging.
Do you think he lost his career at the same time that he won the leadership?
I'm not talking about when he won the leadership. I'm talking about when he lost
the thing
that
you're
seat.
Talking about. This is why I'm trying to make this clear, was at the same time that he won the leadership. So all the bad fighting that happened about McCarthy was at the time he was running for the leadership. He then later lost his career.
That he lost his career when he lost the leadership.
Yes.
Yes.
But I'm talking about it was also very contentious when he won the leadership because they can stomach it. That was a very contentious fight.
Wait, who? Why? How? I don't remember that being.
This was after the 2022 thing that I'm talking about. This is the whole what should we be fight that they had internally. The interesting thing, by the way, as we're talking about this, that I'm realizing is like a lot of this stuff, I think it wasn't their politicians fighting each other. So they have this thing where like they actually yell at each other. Dems don't do that either. But they yell at each other very aggressively.
Okay, I don't remember.
And do you remember the whole fight over the RNC chair and like all this shit?
Yeah, a little this bit, but like I don't. Huge... But this being anywhere near as contentious as the ousting and everything, but okay.
Well, sure, an ousting should be contentious.
Okay, okay. They can
stomach all of this. The party does not at all lose out because Republicans fight and kill each other.
I mean, it sounds like one of the concessions he had to make literally resulted in his political career ending in order for him
to... Yes, but they didn't immediately use that against him, right? So it's not, oh, made a concession.
Oh, so because it wasn't immediate and it happened, you know, a year later?
I don't remember. What were all the reasons that they eventually decided they were done with him?
I thought it was because he agreed with something on Biden for some piece of legislation and Republicans were ass pain because they didn't want him to make any concessions or any agreements whatsoever.
That's an unrelated issue that they used to say we don't want
you
anymore.
But the reason why they were able to oust him was because I think part of the agreements for him to become the speaker was that a single person...
So are you trying to say that like...
Can I finish my fucking sentence? Holy shit! Part of that election that you said was so great for them, one of the things that you had to give on was that a single member could raise their hand and call a vote on you to get kicked out for the fucking speaker bullshit. And that's what happened to him, I think, after he agreed with Biden on some legislative thing. And then afterwards, he didn't win election for the speaker. And then he quit 2 months later, and he's gone from politics forever now.
So are you trying to say that because the party can have these nasty, the Republican Party can have these nasty fights that have a rule attached to them at the time in which they have these nasty fights, if those fights happen and the party moves on later, when the party then has other issues with the person and uses the changed mechanics, that's evidence that the internal infighting mechanics are broken?
Yes. Super simply, yes. That if and a part of an intro that is part of a fight, if one of the gives you had to make was so that somebody could push the self-destruct button on a majority speaker role that had never been lost in all of US history by the majority party in the House, yes, that fight was probably a bad one for your party.
No, process versus outcomes.
I don't know what process versus outcomes
we have to legitimately say that it's okay. I mean, I don't like the Republican Party, so I don't, when I say it's okay, I'm talking about like for them, that they say, okay, we're going to elect you. You need to make concessions about how we control this speakership. That's a process thing. The outcome of Kevin McCarthy later not being liked for concessions he made to Biden and the rule being used against him is an outcome that we don't like. But the process of, oh, we think this is a
that
speakership.
That process literally was an earlier outcome. That's how the process got there.
Is it a bad one, though?
Yes.
Why? By its nature, it's bad?
Yeah, you probably don't want it so that a single... I'm explaining it to you. You probably don't want it so that a single person can raise their hand to call a vote on whether or not you should be ousted as the majority's speaker.
But is that... I mean, you know that you're like making this a weird defense of the question as to whether infighting... Because that rule was not necessarily the thing that had to happen from all that infighting, right? Like, that happens to have been used against him.
I'm just
that was
saying
not a predetermined
that
infighting
was,
that was not
good
a predetermined outcome.
It wasn't good infighting. It was bad if it's producing rules like that.
You have not proven that to me other than in the fact that one of the things that they came up with that in the abstract I don't think is necessarily a negative outcome turned out to be used against him.
It doesn't matter. Even if it wasn't used against him, it still would have been bad. The fact that you're having to give that much.
Why?
Because you're putting a self-destruct button on your leadership because you're so unhappy with, I guess, the fights that are happening in your party.
Does the Republican Party seem to have thrived since 2023-ish?
Yeah, didn't Biden win in 2020-ish? And aren't we going to win in 2024? Or 2028 or whatever?
Wait, I can't tell if you're agreeing or disagreeing with what I asked.
No, I don't understand the point of your question. We're not asking whether or not they ultimately won or lost an election. We're asking whether or not this fight was good or bad. The fight can be bad and they can still win a future election, right? So your question is a non sequitur.
No, that's the point I'm trying to make to you as well about the leadership vote. the ability to self-destruct the head of the party.
I think that was bad. Yes. Even if he wouldn't have been ousted,
but it's not necessarily related.
Okay.
It was not a predetermined portion of the outcome. And again, let's bring this back to Democrats because we're finding in this world where
the process itself was bad.
Uh-huh. Why? You're going to say because of the outcome.
No, I'm not. Because you don't want it so that you can call a vote on the...
That was the outcome of the process.
No, that's the new process is being able to...
What?
The new process is being able to call a vote on whether or not you can oust your speaker with a single person.
That was at the end of the infighting. That was the outcome, not the process.
That
infighting moment, there are different infighting moments. Do you agree? Like, infighting is not like a continuous thing because then we would not be able to
do
have
understand
the start
that
and stop
a,
of whether it was good.
Do you understand that a process implementation can be the outcome of another fight, right? The outcome of McCarthy assuming
yes,
the majority speakership, the outcome
that,
was the implementation 100%. Of a new
yes.
process, and that
Correct.
New process was probably bad.
No, I don't think that the process is necessary. You literally did a fucking MS Paint demonstration of this, and you're failing your own 100 IQ test.
So you think that it's a good process to implement that could lead to a historic loss of control of your own House majority seat?
Did you know at the time you engaged that process that it would lead to the historic whatever you just said?
It doesn't matter.
What do you mean it doesn't matter? How do you have a good process by predetermining
if
or restricting
were,
the potential set of outcomes.
If I were to install a ball shocker in the seat of your uh-huh. car that activates every time
drive.
You take three right turns in a row,
uh-huh.
would it be neutral as long as you don't take three right turns in a row? Is that what you're
I
determining on
right
is the outcome?
Could you say it again? Sorry, I wasn't listening.
Think about what I just said.
Okay, if you install the ball shocker and I take three right turns...
In a row, it'll shock your balls. But let's say you just don't take three right turns in a row. Does that mean you don't have an opinion about that process implementation?
Do you realize that the process wasn't the fucking vote in the speakership yet?
Do you think that that would be a problem if the ball
shocker? How would you implement what you're talking about? You realize that makes no sense, right?
Would the ball shocker be a problem even if it didn't shock your balls?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. So why isn't the self-destruct one-member vote thing a problem, even if they hadn't acted on it?
Because you don't know what the fight is when you go into the infighting.
Okay, then you
the infighting was not about that. Hold on. The infighting was not about the idea of should we be able to retract the speakership easily. The infighting was over the leadership and over the future of the party. So you're saying we should predetermine all the potential paths at the end of infighting before we have the infighting itself? That makes no sense.
No, I'm saying that if at the end of infighting, you're having to make concessions that could heavily damage you in the future, then that uh-huh. seems like it was a very... The infighting probably
yeah, that's
wasn't
fair.
That great.
Well, hold on. Was the infighting probably not that great?
We're going to cut this off soon.
Oh, wow.
Well, I'm in chat. I'm defending your ass. Okay, I've been getting
thank you.
It.
Thank you, Lucas. I appreciate you. Chat, fuck you. Also, what's going to come next? Come on, guys. Really?
Oh, we'll find out. Final words.
I'm trying to say this to you differently because I feel like Stephen should agree with this. When we think about process separate from outcomes, we have to have a separation, a distance from whether or not that infighting was necessary and part of a movement. Right. And like, OK, if there's a movement that happened, that's happening, do we cut off the movement or do we have the infight?
You can have infighting. You're mixing a ton of things up. I think that infighting is fine. You can have infighting, but there are appropriate ways to infight and there are inappropriate ways to infight. An appropriate way could be conversations behind closed doors. It could be like friendly but adversarial conversations on public platforms. It could be adversarial conversations on opposing platforms, but it's never going to be people who are supposed to be on your team doing hostile adversarial interviews against you. That will never, ever be a good thing. Ever. Never.
Are you not open, by the way, to the fact that the idea that the DNC and John all benefit from this having happened? I'm not saying like, oh, Ken looks good, but the idea of the DNC, the Democratic Party, of the establishment being more open to these conversations, of John being willing to have these conversations, of everyone talking about this now in the polity of the Democratic Party in particular, is actually healthy for the party moving forward?
No,
because again,
it wasn't. That was not
why?
A healthy conversation.
Why?
What do you mean? Why would it be? What good
because
came from it?
there's now a sense to which the people inside the party can have this sort of conversation, which means
they already could have the conversation. There's nothing keeping somebody.
There's no evidence of that in the past. There's no evidence of this sort of thing happening in the Democratic Party in the past, which is constantly used against establishment
Democrats.
You're
saying that nobody can approach Ken and have a question about like this report or whatever that wouldn't have happened, but now that he had a conversation.
No, who would have had this conversation?
By nature of it being an insider conversation, I wouldn't be able to answer that. I don't know.
Yeah, right. And that by nature, that would sustain the credibility crisis that we're talking about. So
no,
we cannot.
It's literally unfalsified. Now, John could have asked a question about that or brought that up, and that would have actually been a good point, but he didn't, which is why...
Do you not think evidence of an insider holding a leader to account by its nature doesn't improve credibility, especially inside of a party that
is
traditionally accused of having
John is not an insider in this conversation.
Of course he is.
He's absolutely not. He's not even a delegate.
No, that's nonsense.
He's not even a chair. He's not even a member of the DNC.
Nonsense. Nonsense.
How is he an insider here?
Because this is the part that, again, the left would critique the party about and be right about. They'd be like, okay, you're literally going to mention people who are part of...
Vague, non-responsive.
How is John an insider
talking to the head of the DNC?
Because he is literally a speechwriter for Obama as part of two other speechwriters who then created a media company that then has an audience...
Obama was president 10 years ago?
And now they have infiltrated culture. They have micro-celebrities and celebrities on all their podcasts and their shows.
What does insider mean to you? What does that mean to you?
What does it mean to you?
No, you have the answer.
Yeah.
No, I'm generally...
I'm not answering it to you.
I'm thinking... I don't have a predetermined answer, so I'm trying to...
If you just fought me that hard on it, how can you not have a predetermined answer?
Do you write everything you think down first?
Before I argue it? Yeah, stringently. Yeah, of course. I have in my mind a strong idea what I consider...
You think it's unreasonable that I can call certain people insiders or outsiders, but I don't have an immediate two sentences to provide you? You really think that's unreasonable?
Well, it sounds like you don't even have a bare bones concept of what an insider is in your
mind. Don't think I have a bare bones concept. I'm just thinking, okay? I want to say a set of sentences that you don't call me bad faith over. So why don't you go first?
Well,
or you want me to go first? Give me a sec. Hold on. Let me think.
Justify why I just said
no.
It. Okay.
No.
Let him think, Stephen. This is your final thought.
Think about
Fuck.
It.
Fuck. Fuck.
He can't think of one that includes him.
By the way, I'm not asking AI chat, you fucking idiots. I'm on video Yeah, I know. I don't know what's wrong with them. Also, I know a lot of them love me, so shut the fuck up. My hands are up, and all the people inside the Discord room can see that, so I'm not asking AI anything. I think that an insider is... A member is going to have a definitional problem. Well, I guess I'll always have to have something like that. Is somebody who belongs to the party, who holds a multiplier of influence that we'd say puts them on the inside.
Was Asana an insider?
Actually, that's a great question. Let me think. I think as of a few weeks ago, he unfortunately became an insider. I don't think it's permanent. I don't know what's going to happen next. But I think he has an undue amount of influence in the party right now, where he, for example, could ask certain people for conversations or to like see things, and they'd probably have to do it.
Do you think Hassan would describe himself as an insider?
No, of course not.
All right, Stephen, any final thoughts on this?
Well, just, so an insider, in my mind, I don't know what definition you're using. I don't think anybody uses insider like this. An insider is usually somebody who has privileged access or is part of some particular group or organization that's usually obscured from the public to some extent. So like an insider, it doesn't have anything to do with influence. So like a member, like the deputy chair, I don't know if the DNC has a deputy chair, but the deputy chair of the DNC might be totally unknown publicly and might not even make public statements, but we'd be considered an insider because he's like part of an organization, has privileged information.
Why wouldn't we just use the word employee there?
I don't know, because they might not have for instance, but Mutin is not my employee, but you maybe could consider him like an insider for like the...
Of course I would.
Consider him what, an employee?
No, an insider.
Yeah, but you wouldn't consider my employee, so that's why you wouldn't use the term.
Right, but wouldn't you consider, I mean, if we were in the Obama era and John had retired from being a speechwriter, but it started Positive and Rank, I don't remember the timeline, it was after Obama, I think. Well, let's say he started it while he was still in office. He would be an insider, correct?
While he was in office?
John?
Almost certainly so. No,
while John
probably,
was...
Yeah.
Right. So by definition, it shouldn't be that like your structural relationship to the party is the important
thing.
You
literally just gave a structural relationship. He was a speechwriter.
No, I said influence. I said the word influence. Undue influence.
No, it would have nothing to do because it's an influence. It would have to do with the fact that he probably has access to people like inside the party because he's the speechwriter for Barack Obama. So he's probably communicating.
Okay, I should say
then
undue access and influence.
The influence thing has nothing to do with it. It's whether or not you have like inside information. Insider information.
No, inside routes to information or to process. And again, this is why I would probably say that Hasan right now, even though he would never say it.
Hasan is absolutely turning... not an insider. No.
Do you disagree that he has privileged access?
No, he doesn't have privileged access to like the Democratic. Here, give us 5 minutes and we're done. 5:10, yeah. Okay?
All right, perfect.
No, I don't think Hasan has privileged access or information to the Democratic Party. You could argue that maybe he's an insider on like Al-Sayed's campaign or whatever if he's included in any of those conversations, but even that's like a big maybe. But just having a lot of influence or doing advertisements for something is not doesn't make you an insider, no.
But okay, so let's go to the Jon Favreau question. So why would he not be an insider? He has very privileged access and information and access to information. As
clearly,
in,
he doesn't.
Knows people.
And in that interview, he showed that he knows people doesn't matter. The question is whether he's an insider.
I didn't finish the sentence there, to be clear. It's not just knowing people, but go ahead.
Whatever you were going to say afterwards didn't matter, okay? He's not a member of the DNC, and he doesn't appear to have any special connection to members of the DNC.
Hold on. This interview is not a representation of his connections, right? Like, I think you're seeing this and going, okay, he clearly didn't have another pathway.
Whether or not he was an insider.
Assumption. It was an underbelly assumption of what you're talking about.
Do you think he's an insider for the DNC?
I think he's a Democratic Party insider.
Do you think that he's an insider for the DNC?
I think he's a Democratic Party insider.
Do you think he's an insider for the DNC? Yes or no?
I think he's a Democratic Party insider. Why is this important? Let's talk about why this is important. I've never said that the DNC, and this is, again, the functional purpose of the DNC is different than the
DNC. Do you think he's an insider for the DNC?
Who in this room has worked for the DSCC or for a Democratic Party candidate? Raise your hand. I'm raising my hand. None of the three of you are raising your hand, correct? Okay. So when we talk about, for example, when I worked for the DSCC, the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee.
So when I ask a question, you won't answer it. And then you're claiming that the question isn't
Well, you know why. Why am I not answering it? Steven, why am I not answering it?
Because you think it's going to hurt your argument.
No, it's because I think it's irrelevant to my argument. When I say an insider, I don't mean literally at the DNC, because the way the DNC, the DSCC, the DCCC, the DSLC all work.
It's your time you're wasting. The reason why that's not true is because if it was truly irrelevant to your argument, then you would just answer it, and then we would just move on. That's why I do this tons.
Okay, fine. Ask it again. Go ahead.
Do you think that Ken Martin is an insider to the DNC?
Ken Martin?
Or not Ken Martin. Do you think that Jon Favreau is an insider?
No.
Okay.
I mean, that's never a point I've made. He's an insider of the Democratic Party, the way the party works. And if you interact with the party at all, you know this. It's cross organization departments. You have the DCCC, you have the DSCC, you have the DSLC, you have the DNC.
Sure.
You have
Is Jon Favreau a member of any of the organizations that you just mentioned, or does he have
no,
a special...
No, and yet he's still an insider. So, for example,
where you worked. If you want to waste the rest of the 2 minutes describing an irrelevant point, go for it. Or can I ask my question? Okay, does he have a special connection to anybody in any of the organizations that you just mentioned?
You're so emotional, yeah.
He does?
Yeah,
then why is he citing public reports for every single question that he's asking Ken Martin?
Because he thought this interview would be his moment to establish a separation from the party apparatus, which the DNC counts as, and yes, I do think he actually thought this played a role, and I do think, to your point, it was a mission that he had, and... he's not going to go find information for himself. He's going to make a set of assumptions about how the interview is going to go.
Sure. Then it was an outsider hostile interview. That was my whole argument from the
very
start.
That doesn't make it outsider. Hold on. That doesn't make it outsider. What about that makes it outsider?
The fact that you just said that he was unwilling or unable to gather insider
information. Does not make him an outsider.
But for that interview, it did. For the purposes of that interview, yes.
No, not in any way that should matter to this conversation. If an insider if a literal employee decides to like have a confrontational conversation and not use all of their privileged access information, wouldn't suddenly call them not an employee?
It's not about being an employee. It's about
that's my point.
And you can go back and listen to this conversation, by the way. That's why I said the function that he was serving in that interview was to be on the opposite team. He was representing a different team in that interview. That was his function.
I don't think so, right? And that's my point to you. Like, this benefits the party because the party as a whole, DNC, DCCC, DSCC.
I just asked you if it benefited it, and your answer was, yes, because 100%. Now some people feel like they can have the conversation they could before. It's the most tenuous, like...
Why do you not take that seriously? What is brain broken about
anybody,
you that you don't think that's important?
It's not brain broken. I think that anybody could have had the conversation before. You haven't given a single example of these types of...
Where is it? People could have had it, right? Where is it? Where is that conversation happening? Where do you have evidence that the conversation is happening? Where do you have evidence? Where is the party showing you, Stephen, that it's actually having this conversation in a way that makes you feel like you understand that they're capable of this conversation, well, that they're actually intellectually capable, so willing to have this conversation. Where's the evidence?
Okay, wasting time. So at the end of that interview, Ken Martin listed or rattled off, I think, like 6 or 7 different people where he was like, oh, well, ask her how she feels, or ask this person how they feel, or ask this person how they feel, or ask this person how they feel. So those seem to be
Those are people that he funds with DNC money. That was not about process, and that was not about internal interrogation. That was him going, hey, look at these people who are winning, which, by the way, to the point I made, Democrats always do this. They win midterms, and they say, oh, look at the great things that we're doing, and then they go lose because they might have taken the wrong lessons or aren't exposing the lessons, you know, kind of more broadly speaking, because midterms are very different from generals. What you just said was people Ken Martin funds, he uses examples of people who like him, obviously.
Okay. I mean, I can't, if that's the point you're going to bring up, I can't counter your point to the one that you brought up with no evidence. So there's no way that I can counter this. I guess it's possible the DNC is completely and totally dysfunctional, and I'm just supposed to take that on your word with absolutely zero evidence for that claim because somebody who was doing a hostile interview said it. So
I think you and I could sit on whatever sides of that question that we're talking about, and then we would say, okay, maybe it's good, regardless of whether you can bring evidence or I can't bring evidence, that we decide evidence itself is valuable. There's something to, if PodSafe is even going to be analyzed for this, and they are, right? You and everybody else is yelling about them. Ken is going to be evaluated for this. All of this essentially means, rather than relying on, you know, kind of, oh, what are people going to feel in the abstract about the idea of a party being internally motivated? Well, now we get to see some of the internal mechanics play out. If it's true that people view John, and it's true, as at least some part an insider or as some part of the establishment, and these are the people that they always accuse, as they do, and as you see, by the way, the right makes these accusations too. Oh, these people are the ones still making choices for the party. These are the people who are running
Biden's
administration.
Yeah, the right does this as a bad faith debate tactic because they know that it's a weak point to hit on. They don't actually
believe
it.
And I think the left has a good critique about this internally that is hard to address when we always hide the ball.
Okay.
So again, I go back to 2016
standard, and no other part of the entire planet has ever held to this standard. It's a ridiculous standard on its face.
Why do we have to care about whether it's ridiculous and not whether or not we just address it? So again, if it can
because
be used against us,
it's not the norm. Yeah. There's probably a good reason why it's not the norm, and the reason why is because if you have
what do you think would happen? What do you think would happen? Actually, this is a great point. What do you think would happen if they released this report if it has nothing damning in it? Okay, which he says over and over and over again in that stupid fucking interview.
100%.
There's nothing damning. Why can't we just fucking keep to the idea?
Why are you asking me and then not letting me answer the question? The reason what's going to happen is anybody is going to look to take a bite off of whatever they want of that report to further whatever their narrative is, and they're going to use it to further the infighting.
Except there's two things. One, the things that you're worried about them using as a weapon, everyone already has an opinion on. No one's going to change their mind because of the IP shit that might exist in the report.
It'll just strengthen it, though.
It's not. There's no strengthening it. Everyone's already at the extremes. There's absolutely no strength. You say this all the time. People are either brain broken on this or not, in your view. And it's not going to change anyone's opinion. There's no strengthening. And so this is already the conversation. By releasing the report, you're at least willing to have the dialogue, at least willing to show you some of the data. And in addition, there's probably other interesting things there that the party, whether we talk about the apparatuses of the party, the heads of the state, or even the polity, as in the people, will benefit from seeing or find interesting or intellectually interesting and go, oh, I can trust this party more because it's not trying to hide the ball from me. So if you're saying they're going to weaponize it, you have to tell me why that matters. There's nothing that they're going to do in a weaponization that will actually harm the party. If the standard becomes everything Hassan might tweet about or do a Twitch stream about is going to be weaponized, and so we must bury anything that he's going to potentially do, that's a terrible standard. Like, what is the standard that you have?
All right. Thank you. We appreciate it. We'll see you next call-in, okay?
Oh, wow.
All right. Thank you.
You're not going to respond to that?
No, you wasted all your time yapping and rambling because every time you're making a weak point and you know it's a weak point, you have to fill like 20 different filibuster things in the end to try to.
You're being cowardly. Answer my question.
I'm not being cowardly.
What's the standard of weaponization? What's the standard of weaponization?
You wanted to bring up Hassan again. I guess it's whatever Hassan tweets. That's what you just said.
So triggered.
Yes. No, you said it was whatever Hassan tweets. I agree with you. That's the standard. Yes, 100%. Okay. Bye. Love you.
Yeah. Love you too.
Morgan.
Hello. Sorry. I'm playing League. That guy is clearly an Annie fan. That's all I have to say. There's like that guy provides no value. He's very clearly just going to betray you and be on another panel in like 2 or 3 weeks. That's it. Yeah. Bye.
Thank you, Morgan. Jock Rates, go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, we can hear you.
How does my mic sound? There's a shitload of construction happening.
That's okay.
It's good.
Outside.
Go ahead.
Okay, sweet. First of all, you guys should bring that guy on last next time because he takes a while.
I've heard that.
So two things that we could talk about. I'll let you guys decide.
You decide. 15 minutes left on these. Go. All right. You decide. Just pick a thing. Yeah.
All right. We'll go through the faster one. I have a list of some rhetorical lessons that I've heard you say that you've kind of taken away over your time debating and stuff. And I wanted to just name them and then have you, maybe Dan, Mr. Mouton, everybody here can give you a grade on how you think you've been doing on those. And then we can talk about them if you want. What do you think of that?
Sure. Pick the top three. Go.
Okay. First one. I'll pick top three. Okay. In that case, let's go with this one. So positive positions spam. This has been a discussion recently. The idea of using more positive positions. How do you think you do on that? Yeah. What would you give yourself maybe on scale?
What was the last debate that I had?
The last debate that you had? I don't remember.
I feel like I haven't had any debates recently, so it's hard to say.
Yeah. Well, what about also, I'm also in your YouTube videos, I would say that, not just in debating. Just in general, how do you think you do on that?
I would have to think back to my last debate. I'm probably better than I was in the past, but I probably could still improve on it.
Mr. Mouton and Dan, what do you guys think?
I have no idea. I'm going to be honest. I don't know what your question was.
I think I generally try to point out more positives of what like Biden and the Democratic Party accomplished and to have like a positive position on like, look, I think that Biden did good on this. I don't think the senility was anywhere near the level you guys thought it was. I think that it's good when the United States is, playing police sometimes with other countries. I don't think that every foreign policy intervention we have is bad. Like, I think I try to present a slightly more positive version of this stuff than just being on the negative side of things, or at least in the past.
Yeah, I agree. I think the one place that I would say you can improve on this a little bit more is in your YouTube videos, because I find that in a lot of the recent videos, one I can think of is one where you're talking about Vosh is one that I can think of recently. You spend most of the videos you tearing down the other person, which is good. You're very good at that. But I think for somebody who's not a audience member, somebody who's not already a DGG or something, they kind of don't understand what you're tearing them down for and what your positive position is. I've heard you give them, so I know that you have these positive positions, but I think for somebody who's just stumbling across your channel, they might watch a video like that and just really not know what you're for, if that makes sense.
Sure.
All right.
Another one, this one is big for me, making fun of unserious people and unserious positions. How do you think you've done on that?
As in like doing it more or doing it less?
However you think you're doing on that, if you think you should do it more or less.
I feel like I've pointed that out a lot more, but I feel like politics in general has become a lot more unserious, so.
What's your position on that, Color?
I think that you are doing a lot better about that recently, but I think you can push it with certain people especially. I think you can push it much harder than you are. So like an example I can think of is, there was a time, I think it was maybe a month ago, maybe more, you were debating a couple of conservatives and they hit you with the classic, I don't know about that. And then you just reflected it back to them when they started talking about the next thing, you just hit them with a, I don't know about that. I don't know what you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
To kind of like show them how ridiculous what they were doing was. I think that was great. That was very funny. It really shut them up after that. But I think in general, you can maybe draw in more people by memeing on these people more. So like, for example, projection is a big thing that I see all the time when you're talking to conservatives or just a lot of people in general. You can see a lot of projection happening. I think it'd be funny as hell if you had something like a projector screen in the background that you could turn on and says projection. Or when somebody does a dog whistle, if you like pulled out a whistle or something like that. Just like little funny memes I think could make good clips and extend your reach in things like YouTube videos, shorts, and I think it really does point out how ridiculous other people are.
Okay.
We'll get him a whistle.
I'll keep that in mind.
I like the whistle idea. I thought that'd be fun.
Okay.
And then the last one, since we're only doing three, utilizing bad faith tactics, or maybe more generally learning from the bad faith tactics of your opponents. Do you think you should be using some of those tactics, like the things that you've picked up on other people doing? Or should you, is it like,
probably not. I think they generally just annoy me and I probably don't want to, but it, like being able to counter them more effectively and holding people to answer questions or whatever better is, I think, always good. I think I do a better job of that than I used to several years ago, but that's the thing I can always improve on.
Okay. What do you think about, dude, my queen, Hillary Clinton, the public private positions? What about, are there positions that you think should be held more privately and others that should be held more publicly? Because I think a lot of the things, a lot of the positions I hear you have, I think are very good policy positions, but they don't really resonate well in a general way. So what do you think about that? Are there positions that you think maybe you like to keep within the stream, within the DGG audience, keep it a little more quiet, and then other positions that are easier to argue or more generally appealing that you think are something you'd like to blast out more?
Just maybe, but I mean, like, I'm not running for office, so I don't care as much about having some unpopular opinions, since it's not like I'm going to lose an election based on it. But like, depending on the platform I'm on, I'm generally just going to speak about it. It really just depends on what we're talking about. But I'm not about to go to some debate forum and then, like, you know, rattle off my most conservative economic policy positions or something, or talk about things that I know are super unpopular with the audience that I'm speaking to. It just depends on, I guess, on the platform. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you do a pretty good job of picking and choosing what you're going to fight on and based on the audience. What about in the broader Democratic Party? Are there positions that you think should stay private, but you still think maybe are good positions, and other ones that we should be pushing on a lot harder?
Like, as for the Democratic Party as a whole?
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe an easier way to think of it is maybe in buckets of, like, green would be a position that any Democrat, period, should be championing. Yellow is maybe a position that can be public in some districts, maybe not so much in a more conservative district, and like a red position is something that maybe you would support, but you don't think Democrats should talk about it.
I don't know. I'd have to think a lot about this. I do think that we have to get rid of the Trump tax cuts, and that's probably going to be an unpopular position. So maybe that would have to be a thing that you don't talk about as much. And then I think that things like packing the Supreme Court or getting rid of the filibuster might not be good things to run on, but are probably important things that we should be pushing for. But yeah.
What are the big winners rhetorically, you think?
I don't know. Anything involving fucking billionaires or AIPAC, I guess.
Okay. Do.
Yeah.
Do.
Excuse me.
All right.
All right. We're going to move on because we got a ton of people and.
Definitely.
You know, appreciate
Peace.
It.
Have a good day.
Love you.
Wrecking Ball, come on in.
Hey, man. How you guys doing? Can hear the stress in your guys' voice. It's a time right now.
We're never stressed.
So I won't take too long, and that was a long conversation previously that I only caught the end of. But I guess overall, at this point, that Jon Favreau interview was atrocious, but it happened.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, do you think it just makes more sense to just release it? Because at this, there's no winning. Like, we were never going to win before, but now there's really no winning, and now we're just taking flack for not releasing it, even though there probably was good reasons to not release to begin with. But at this point, it almost feels like you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, but at least you can salvage some level of that quote-unquote credibility.
If
that
they, like,
about.
I can give you, and I'll bet you 2-1 on this, or anybody, if they were to release that report, no matter what's in there about Israel-Palestine, the lefty, weird, tanky people are going to repeat that ad nauseum all the way up to and maybe even through the midterms, 100%, no matter what they say. So, like, why release it? I mean, like nobody really cares that much about it aside from the people that are harping on it over and over again on the far left. Like, I don't think there are going to be voters, like, in the midterms in, like, local races. When I say local, I mean, like, for the, you know, House of Representatives, where there it's like the Republican is like, how are you going to trust this guy when Ken Martin, he's part of the DNC, that's like the Democratic National Committee, that's like the people who kind of, like, well, it's not. Well, yeah. Anyway, they had an autopsy. They did not a real autopsy, but like a report of why they lost the last election, and they didn't release that report. Like, no one's going to give a fuck about this. Literally, nobody will care about this.
The counterpoint is, I completely agree. It doesn't matter what's in there; they're going to get their talking points out from it. But the counterpoint to that, I think, would be, it doesn't matter what's in there. So, like, at this point, if you release it, no one's going to care whatever the Israel Palestine stuff is. If it's damning or not, it doesn't matter, right? That's not going to sway people. But I do think you will see much more mainstream push from the Fox and I'll say just general mainstream media about the DNC not being transparent.
I don't think
we see right now.
I'm curious. I don't know. Maybe somebody can go find articles. The first articles I'd seen them talking about it were talking about Jon Favreau's interview about it with Ken Martin. Maybe the Republicans have brought it up in the past, but like that would be a crazy thing. The Republicans are so not transparent.
I don't think it'd be the Republicans though. I think it's the problem. I think it would be like your CNNs. and your ABCs now that are going to bring it up.
Well, yeah, that's because they're fucking retarded. Pods. But I mean, like,
if anybody
that would retardedly bring that up is also probably also going to jump on the Israel-Palestine shit or whatever else they see in there. Like, it's just everybody's going to take a chunk at it and they're just going to use it to, like, nothing good will ever come from releasing a thing like that publicly. It just would never, ever, ever happen. It's always, everybody's going to take a bite out of the piece that they want. And they're going to use it to further the fight. Right now, they can fight about it not being released. If it gets released, though, there's going to be so many different people, I imagine, that could just take a chunk out of some particular part and then fight with it. So I think you just bury it, ignore it. Some people rumble, groan about it, and you just move on from it. But
so then as a counter to that, I would say then, is there benefit in, ironically, fragmenting the things that people are taking a chunk out of, right? So right now, there's only one message, which is the DNC did not release the stupid report, right? That's the only thing anyone's going to say. If it is released,
the future message will be like, oh, leftist, we'll call him leftist. Leftist Jon Favreau was able to get the report released. What a hero. And now we learn about Gaza. It's a lose situation now.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I just, at this point, I almost feel like it's just, it was stupid. It shouldn't have happened, but it did. And I almost feel like there's more to be gained by releasing it simply because it causes the angles of attack to be more fragmented and easier to deal with than right now.
The angles of attack are only effective, though, if you play into them. Like, if you just ignore it, nobody would give a fuck. Nobody even knows what the DNC is. Nobody knows who Ken Martin is, and nobody knows what this autopsy is. It's only effective as long as people are amplifying the attacks. The far left will, because that's what they do, because they want to destroy the Democratic Party. But other than that, like, nobody's going to... I don't think anybody cares that much. Unless you also amplify, which unfortunately the Senate does, because they're fucking retarded. But if you just don't amplify the attacks, then nobody's gonna give a fuck.
I haven't looked recently, because it's been a weekend, but has there been mainstream pickups on this besides Jon Favreau? Like, I'd be curious to dig through and see, like, has this
Jon Favreau is not mainstream.
I think Axios report
like
on it.
Talking about it, and Axios talking about the DNC not releasing it prior to Jon Favreau.
Yeah, there was an Axios thing I think that mentioned it, but in terms of like serious media coverage, I don't think people are talking about this too much.
No one on CNN is fucking spouting off about this in a 5-minute segment. It's enough.
Probably not. That is the oddly weird benefit of the absurd time we live in. Yeah. There's always so much more shit going on that's way worse.
Yeah, to some extent, yeah, true.
That was it. I just wanted to, you know, talk about that. But also, I'll say, man, I know it's stressful. I know you're tired. I can't imagine how absurd it is for you to deal with all that. But keep on keeping on, man. A lot of people are looking for you to, like, or looking to you to keep driving forward on that piece. And I know it's a lot of responsibility, but people do appreciate it. Like, you built
the
community.
Thank you. I need to hear that.
Well, thanks a lot, buddy. I think.
Have a good one.
Take care, guys.
Be careful.
Now he's talking to me.
Hey, do you care and want to make a difference about politics? Digital Ground Game and I are inviting you to participate in organizing for the upcoming midterms. If you want to join a canvassing house or come to events or just volunteer a few hours a week from home, fill out the form below and help us save democracy. We will find something for you to do and we will connect you to political action.